Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Perspectives on the Bible. This is Pastor Fred. It's the 17th of September in 2010. And today we'll be looking at two things in particular as we open up our show. I hope you have a good night and I hope you have a good day ahead of you. First off, we'll be looking a little bit at my responses and reactions to Pope Benedict's celebrated visit to London. And then we will go on from there to go back to our continuing study of Nikki Gumbel's book, A Life Worth Living, and specifically we'll be looking at New Responsibilities, Chapter 4, and moving on from there. It's a great book. I hope you enjoy it. If you're looking at this on your computer, you may note that I have put up Pope Benedict's book there. I'm a very big fan of Pope Benedict myself, personally, because I think he's a man of great intellect and tremendous ability. And Pope Benedict takes the most complicated and difficult theological and philosophical concepts and puts them into language that is easy to understand. I think that's a great teacher. And it's important for us because, you know, we're not the first people on this planet. We're not the first people who have ever thought about the big questions of life. And this morning, even, His Holiness at St. Mary's College in Twickenham, I guess it is, and also at the ecumenical meeting there, he enunciated some very huge principles. And one of the things that's very exciting about this Pope is he takes on the world of intellectuals, not just the mundane, ordinary, nitty-gritty, grimy world that we have been celebrating so much over the last 50 or 60 years. But His Holiness recognizes is that the thinking precedes the doing. And I think he's very much convinced of the importance of thinking rationally and insightfully and reflectively, biblically, and he comes to the world with a specifically Christian orientation, a biblical orientation, a Christian philosophical orientation, an orientation of looking at things in the light of the Bible, in the light of the event of Christ, which he regards as the central event of all human history, as do all Christians. And he comes to these meetings with that context. And so we're going to be looking at that, and then I'll give you some of my reactions. I have quite a few pages of notes here this morning. I tell you that I got up at 5 a.m., not my normal time, in order to watch EWTN's coverage of the Pope of Twickenham, St. Mary's College, a college that used to be dedicated for the, mainly dedicated for the education of teachers. And then from there he went on to a rally of young people, where he was very well received by several thousand young people in a planned event that was quite dynamic in terms of its interracial, intercultural, and its intergenerational aspects. And then from there he went on to speak to the ecumenical gathering there, where we heard some very exciting presentations by those who received him. So as we go into this, we're going to take a break first. We'll give you a little bit of time to maybe get a cup of coffee if you care to do so. And we'll listen to our opening theme, which is Hope, Faith, and Courage by the Brothers of Faith, which I have received. I don't know if you can still get it, but I know that I got it off of the Internet, music, D-Music, and the Brothers of Faith have an album out there, I think. And this is one of the songs that I think they did a very good job with, and I've chosen to use it repeatedly. I just enjoy it. It's a lot of strong and powerful and very encouraging words of faith and hope and courage in this song. So let's take a listen to the Brothers of Faith.
Courage,
Well, welcome back. This is Pastor Fred. Here we are looking at the second day of Pope Benedict the 16th, a journey to England and Scotland and Wales. Wonderful events this morning. But I'd like to begin with a scripture reading, the book of Ephesians, the fourth chapter. And I'm going to skip some verses because they don't add to what we want to talk to today, and I'm not picking and choosing the Bible passages, but just trying to find the most salient points from the book of Ephesians chapter 4. And I'll just read it to you, chapter 4, verse 1. As a prisoner for the Lord Jesus, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. There is only one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to one hope when you were called, one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is over all and through all and in all. And as I reflect on His Holiness Pope Benedict XVI's visit to St. Mary's College in Twickenham, I guess it is, I'm sorry, I'm not English, I have to get these languages down. Twickenham, to St. Mary's College. Wonderful visit, very well received. I think of him saying about himself as he approaches this entire English visit, I am a servant of the servants of Christ. I am a prisoner for the Lord Jesus Christ. And in effect, a prisoner of the Lord Jesus Christ, because the Lord Jesus Christ is my master. And I, although the vicar of Christ on earth, and although the successor of St. Peter, and although enthroned every place he goes on a throne in the front of the room, which is all very fine, yet in his own person, Pope Benedict displays a consistent and a transparent attitude of humility. And so we're looking at the fourth chapter of Ephesians. As a prisoner for the Lord Jesus, I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. And you know, there's been a lot of talk about the scandals within the Roman Catholic Church, and you know, I'm not even going to be disingenuous here. I mean, if you wanted to, you'd say, well, what about the scandals among teachers? What about the scandals among psychiatrists? What about the scandals of doctors abusing? We could go on to that, but that's not the point. Of what the Pope wants to say, and that's at the point of what I want to say, is to call others to question. Let's just look at ourselves as Christians. I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling that you have received. And I think Pope Benedict displays in his life so far, and after becoming Pope, in his writings and his attitude and everything you see about him, most certainly a humble and gentle, verse 2, and patient person, who bears with one another in love. And he may not be the dynamo that I know people have been saying, and we want to compare him to John Paul II. Benedict may not be the dynamo in terms of youth, in terms of strength, and in terms of the striding across the world stage that Pope John Paul II was. But, you know, John Paul II had a specific mission from God, one of those missions being, I believe, that he was an active participant in the dismantling of communism in Europe. And Pope Benedict has a different calling because that has been taken care of by his predecessor. And he doesn't have to worry about opening the windows of the church and letting fresh air, aggiornamento. He has, does have a predecessor, John the 23rd and Paul the 6th, who did that for him. But Pope Benedict is confronted by a world where a religion, according to him, and I think he's correct, is being marginalized, where religion in the schools, religion in by the schools, religion by the schools is being denigrated, where religious faith by the media, by the press, by the magazines, by celebrities, by the world culture is being denigrated, where religion is being pushed out of the public arena and actually told it does not have a place in the public square and cannot be there, where people are being taught in colleges and universities and every form of medium of communication that religion and religious beliefs are private personal matters to be kept privately and personally, which the Pope claims, and I think rightly so, is a form of ghettoization where people are being forced to keep their faith to themselves, which effectively puts you in a ghetto of your individual self where you have to keep everything private and in hiding. It's a form of persecution where Christians would have to be afraid to appear in public lest they be persecuted and not necessarily prosecuted, although in some cultures even and in societies and governments, the display of Christianity, Saudi Arabia, for instance, some other countries, the display of Christianity is punishable by civil punishment. And in our own world, we see this happening in India, where Christians are being have rocks thrown at them and having their places of worship burned down by people in India and Pakistan. Terrible things have happened there. We've seen the Eastern churches systematically pushed out of their culture and the society, although they predate the dominant religions in those areas, Islam. We see the Egyptian church, which predates Islam by 500-600 years, being pushed out of the public square. In Ethiopia, we see the Christian church being suppressed in so many instances by governmental action and others. Around the world, Christianity is being systematically expunged from the public arena. And the Pope is a brave man, I believe, who has, with confidence and with conviction, walked into the arena of public discourse. And he's going to be taking that to London and to Westminster Cathedral and to the leaders of industry and government. And I think in the afternoon at 10:30 o'clock today, if you this is the 17th of September, EWTN will begin its coverage. If you happen to have ability to get to a television, or maybe you'll be able to watch a redo of it later on today, when I'm sure that Pope Benedict will be bringing a strong and powerful message that religion must not be wiped out, shoved out, pushed out, kicked out of the public square, that religion has a place in society, and that the culture and the society sponges out religion at its own peril. And the fullness of Christian life is something that can be an additional piece and something that can be the determinative piece. As a matter of fact, it could be the centerpiece of a meaningful existence. That's what he talks about. Now, I'm going to go on looking at a little bit of this Ephesians chapter in verse 14. So he says, no longer be infants. St. Paul says, fourth chapter of Ephesians, verse 14, no longer be infants tossed to and fro by the waves and blown here and there by every wind of teaching by the cunning and craftiness of people in their deceitful scheming. Now, you know, that was addressed to a particular audience at a particular time in Ephesus when there were teachers and preachers within the church who were coming about and teaching this particular belief or that particular belief or religion according to me, and then another guy would get up and talk about religion according to him, and one group would say, no, these are the parameters of religion, and another group would say, these are the parameters of religion. And St. Paul is not saying that people don't have a chance to talk, and he's not saying that they don't have a chance to get up and give their opinions, but he said, within the household of faith, when you've come to faith, no longer be an infant, he says, tossed to and fro by the waves and blown here and there willy-nilly by every wind of doctrine and by the cunning and craftiness of people in their deceitful scheming. I think it's very interesting that Paul is willing in the book of Ephesians to look at those who are preaching and teaching in his time that they are holding specific opinions within the church, and he's saying, well, let's look at them not just from a philosophical, theological base. Of course, you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. But also, let's look at their cunning and their craftiness. He calls them cunning. He calls them crafty. He calls them deceitful schemers. Instead, he says, verse 15, speaking the truth in love, speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into him who is the head, that is Christ. Now, what he's saying here is not everybody is right. Not everybody is telling the truth. Not everybody's opinion can be accepted by everybody. I think the rabbi said it so very well this morning when they did the ecumenical service, ecumenical discussion. He said, you know, as people in communication with each other, if we have nothing in common, then we cannot communicate. Now, that's from the rabbi to the pope and to the others in the room, Islamic representatives and others, Hindu representatives and others. The rabbi said, nothing in common produces the fact that we cannot communicate, and if we have everything in common, then we have nothing to say. That is a very powerful, pithy statement, and very much to the point that he was speaking. So let's take a break here just a minute, and we'll listen to our song. We have a lovely song, which I always, with all I am, it's just a lovely song. I hope you'll enjoy it. And then as we listen, maybe you'll want to get another cup of coffee or get your Bible. We'll be looking some more at what Pope Benedict was able to do today in England.
I feel
back at Perspective on the Bible. We're looking at Pope Benedict in England, and we're paying attention to his actions there in the context of a Bible reading that I'm sharing with you from the book of Ephesians. We just did the first couple of verses there, 1, 2, and 3, and then we went to verse 14, and now we're going to go to verse 17 of chapter 4 of the book of Ephesians. So I tell you this and insist on it in the Lord, that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. Now, you know, just to stop there a moment, I think Pope Benedict is talking about that quite often, is that people who are totally ignorant of faith, do not believe in the place of faith, and do not agree that there is any place for religion, are really living in futility, have no future, have no meaning, have no purpose. They're meaning in a self-serving circle, or like a computer that refuses to go forward. You know, it just goes back and it gets frozen. Those of us who have computers know that when the computer gets frozen, there's only one thing you can do, and that is you reboot it. You shut it down and you start it up again, because once it gets into that frozen state, when it clicks onto itself and gets into a circle and just keeps circling itself within its own intelligence, the computer intelligence, it stops functioning. It cannot. It's of no use anymore. And so, like a computer that's in a frozen state, I think Pope Benedict thinks that people today who are insistent in education, in colleges, in universities, in schools, in societies, from the lowest levels to the highest level, he feels that they are, quote, in verse 18 of Ephesians, they are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. Ephesians has so much to say to us about present culture and society. Pope Benedict is going to England as a representative of religion in general, and I think that all of us, whatever religion, can take to heart the words of the speakers this morning at the ecumenical meeting which followed St. Mary's College in Twickenham. But to go back to what he's saying here is that, you know, people can have hardened hearts. They don't want to listen. They can put their fingers in their ears and say, I'm not going to listen. They can have a temper tantrum like a little child. They can run away from any kind of learning, reading, and advancement. They can be happy in their own little mud pile, wallowing in the mud all their lives, you know, as it were. But these same people, let's just use that example. If you use a child who is refusing to behave, refusing to learn, refusing to move forward, sticks their fingers in their ears and refuses it and just wants to play in the mud pile, that same child expects to be fed and expects to be washed and expects to have his diaper changed and expects to have protection and expects to have the parents do what the child wants to do in order to keep the child healthy and to feed the child and to protect the child, while the child is not capable of providing any of those things for himself. And also, while the child, in a temper tantrum, we might call it a hardening of heart because of their ignorance, the child is refusing to be cooperative and will not co-labor with the parents in their life. And so verse 19 of Ephesians says, having lost all sensitivity, they, such people who are having temper tantrums and hardened hearts and refusing to engage in reasonable, rational behavior, having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity and are full of greed. Now, this is not only a sexual issue. Everybody wants to throw sex in there right away. It's not that. It's about self-indulgence. I think Pope Benedict speaks very, very forcefully when he speaks to the teachers at St. Mary's College, Twickenham. He said that teachers are not just there to teach facts, because facts of themselves are sterile. I think I'm paraphrasing the Pope here. He said education, rather, is not just a series of facts or a series of lessons to be learned, but it's an education in the formation of a person, in the formation of a person. And the education's role has a part in in the formation of the full person, the total person. Now, you know, we say, well, I my own experience, I would just share that. I've had many people tell me that religion has no place in school because it's too influential, and so therefore we expunge religion. But then the professor or the teacher or the lower grade school teacher teaches about the green movement and says that we're not supposed to cut down trees to build houses. Or the same teacher says you can't come in this classroom and have a prayer or read the Bible or teach anything from a Christian perspective, yet the same teacher will go on and teach that the ecological movement is the right movement and that we cannot have coal furnaces anymore and we cannot have coal energy because coal is a dirty fuel. Then in the university level, you know, we can't look at anything from a Christian perspective, and yet the professor goes on to teach a communist perspective or a socialist perspective or any other kind of perspective that you can think of. And so socialism is okay, and communism is okay, and fascism is okay, and secularism is okay, and materialism and hedonism and all kinds of isms, that's okay, but Christianity-ism is not allowed, you see? That's just picking on one particular, it's expunging, or to take a sponge and sponge it away like you erase it on a blackboard so it never appears. Not just erase it with an eraser, but take a wet sponge and erase everything Christian off that blackboard so not even the slightest trace of Christianity remains. Well, Pope Benedict is of the opinion, he writes it in his books quite often, that Western culture is intimately tied and bound together with Christianity. And Christianity is intimately tied and bound up in Greco-Roman Judaic predecessors. And so if we take it all together, he says, you know, we need to know about Greece, we need to know about Rome, and we need to know about Christianity and Judaism. And in today's world, even when I went to school, which is some 50-plus years ago, the teachers were very big on making sure at the college level that we understood about Greeks. Oh, absolutely. You need to know all about them, the pagan Greeks and their gods and goddesses. And you need to know all about Romans. Oh, absolutely. And the excesses of Roman society and the structure of civil Roman society. But absolutely, and then we end it. And we jump right from there to the Crusades. And all my education, even in the lower levels, but especially in the college level and the postgraduate level, I found that that was the selection of the professors almost to an absolute place. We would go Greek, yes, absolutely, good. And we would go to Roman, good. We would even go to Arab, wonderful, good. And then we would skip over all of Christianity, and we would go right to the 1400s or the 1200s for the Crusades and the slaughter and the killing of the Christians that the Christians did in the Middle East. Well, you know, there's a lot of history between the year 0 or the year 1 and the year 1200 or the year 1114 or whatever you want to pick. And that's just totally ignored as being unimportant and something to be ignored. And yet, when the Pope goes to St. Mary's College, actually when he goes to England, when he goes to Scotland, each one of the presenters has been presenting the history. It's one gigantic history lesson, and they talk about the different people. In his speech to the teachers at Twickenham College, His Holiness said, you know, in order to have education be contributing to the formation of the full life of the individual person, we need to impart wisdom, he said, impart wisdom and knowledge of the Creator. And then he went through a list of people. I didn't get the entire list since I was taking notes, listening to it on television, but St. Benedict, St. Columbo, St. David, and the monastic movements. And when he got to the monastic movements, the Pope said the monks had an inclination to learning and to the advancement of knowledge, and that was the basis, he said, for the establishment of the Western educational system and is the foundation of Western culture. And I know that the Pope has written elsewhere that, you know, that includes that the church absorbed into its system of thinking Greco-Roman Judaic thinking and gave it an expansive Christian viewpoint in the light of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, of Bethlehem, of Jerusalem, of the cross, of the resurrection. And these other predecessor thinking patterns were incorporated into it, into Christian thinking. And so the Pope went on to say that educators, male educators and female educators at every level are part of an educational apostolate. They have a specific, unique, and important role to play inside of and participating with the hierarchy of the church, with the pastors and the clerical aspects of the church. They have an important part to play with the evangelical and evangelistic roles of the church, and they are a unique apostolate to, as he said, put the life of faith at the center of school life, the life of faith at the center of school life, Christ the center, Christ the center. And it was a delightful talk. I think he again engaged the thinking. He engaged the educators. He engaged them in history. He engaged them in thinking, and believing, as he strongly does, that the way you think, the creed, the way you believe, is the father to the deed or the action, that the way you believe is the way you will act. Pope Benedict is a warrior for Christianity in an increasingly secular society that wants nothing to do with what he has to say. And he's saying that, no, I'm going to be a lone voice, and yesterday he said it very well, to the young people, and he said it today again to the young people, do not be afraid of being the lone voice. And if you are of the truth, and if you are of the Lord, and he is of the truth, then you know that that voice will be heard. It might not be heard by those who are screaming at you right now, but there are ears out there who are going to hear, which always reminds me of the famous episode from the Old Testament, Elijah, you know, where Elijah goes before the Lord and says, Lord, they, the people of Israel, have abandoned your ways, they have abandoned your worship, they have abandoned your altars and torn them down. They have persecuted the prophets. They have killed the prophets. They have hunted them down. And they seek me even to take my life. O Lord, even I only am left to give witness and testimony to you. And then he hides himself in a cave. And God says to him, Elijah, I have 7,000 of you who, when you die, I will call upon the next one, and the next one, and the next one. And when those 7,000 are used up, I will raise up another 7,000 to give witness and testimony to me. I think it's in that context, of course, that Pope Benedict speaks to the English people. Now, to just go back into Ephesians at verse 25, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25. Therefore, each of you must put off falsehood and speak truthfully to your neighbor, for we are all members of one body. Do not sin by being angry. Do not let the sun go down while you are angry. And do not give the devil a foothold in you. Be, rather, people who are willing to engage other people in the dialogue of faith. Truth and serenity go together. And just before we have a little bit of a break, to wrap up the educational portion of His Holiness' visit to Strawberry Hill, as it was called at one time, St. Mary's College, and for the education of teachers, and also his address to the young people at the Sports Authority, I think His Holiness most certainly wanted to talk about the splendor of truth and the importance of being of the truth and not being afraid to speak the truth in love. You're listening to Perspective on the Bible. I'm Pastor Fred. I hope you'll stay with us. We're just going to take a little bit of a break. I'm going to pick up our song here with all our hope, faith, and courage by the Brothers of Faith. We're going to be listening to it for a few moments. Stay with me, or get a cup of coffee, or have a croissant or something, and take a break with me, and then we'll be back. Please stay with us. We have about 50 minutes to go as we deal with mainly Pope Benedict's visit to England. Hello, this is Pastor Fred, and welcome back to our comments on Pope Benedict's visit to England, especially his visit to Twickenham this morning. It's this morning our time in the USA. I thought it was very interesting to note the commentator from Vatican Radio mentioned that the Pope, after he spoke to the group of teachers and educators in the hall, went out to a meeting in the sports arena called the Big Assembly, or the Big Gathering, I guess it was. And about 4,000 people, children mainly, were there. But the Vatican mentioned that the Roman Catholic Church in England, Scotland, and Wales had arranged for internet hookups through Vatican use of the computer, and potentially 800,000 children in Catholic schools in England, Scotland, and Wales were able to see the Pope's visit and to witness the event through the hookup, through the Internet, in their classrooms. And I thought that was very, very exciting to think. You know, today we're big crowd counters. We want to say, well, he only got 50,000, or he only got 12,000, or he only got 4,000, and there's some grass. We can see some grass there, and not everybody's packed shoulder to shoulder. But, you know, you and I are the products of it. I don't know how many people are listening to this right now, but I do know that maybe 50, 75, 100, and sometimes even 200 people click on the archived copy of this program and listen to it later on in the day when they have the opportunity. That's the wonder and the marvelous of Blog Talk Radio, and I want to thank them for that opportunity. The Blog Talk Radio is a fabulous opportunity for people to express good things and positive things on the Internet for free. It's quite amazing that they make that opportunity available to us who have something to say. It was obvious that the Pope was invigorated by the young people when he went to see them. He always seems to brighten up and lighten up when he comes to young people. And I noted that even the AP reporter, now AP is not a favorite of the Pope, and all they've been doing is drumming on the sexual abuse scandal for the last 3 or 4 weeks. Drum, 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 bang, bang, bang. And even the article that I read in the latter part of the article, bang, bang, push, push, knock, knock, about the sexual abuse scandal, at least was willing, although paid absolutely no attention to what he had to say, in the first couple of paragraphs, was willing to say that the Pope was happy with the children and that he gave them an inspirational talk, encouraging them to give up false money as the only thing that will make them happy, and encouraging them to go after the higher qualities of life. Watching it, I thought that was a very remarkable part of the program. But I just want to call a few attentions to what I saw when I witnessed it. I have to underscore this, a very interracial group at the school, black and white, and there's some brown colors. I don't know what you want to do about that, except to say that, you know, it's remarkable. Roman Catholicism, Christianity is across racial barriers, it's across national barriers. The leader was a black young man who, I'm emphasizing his blackness because, you see, that's part of the colonial heritage of England. And you can take it as a negative or a positive. I take it as a positive. This young man, speaking very British English, was the leader, praise God, and he was an inspirational leader of great talent and ability. And I thought it was very, very interesting that, you know, not everybody in the crowd was white and not everybody in the leadership was white. And if they chose the most talented, I'm sure he's a very highly talented leader for the youth celebration. And he spoke eloquently of the faith and eloquently of Christianity. And I thought that was a very interesting piece. His Holiness, when he got to speak to the young people, talked about the whole life, the whole person, and he encouraged young people not to only seek money or only seek fame or only seek things like that. He talked about finding happiness in God. And then in his ability, as I said, Pope Benedict has a wonderful, wonderful ability to communicate. And in the key portion of it, for those who are listening, now we all have to understand that Pope Benedict's native language is German. He's a very soft-spoken man, and he speaks rather rapidly when he speaks English. So sometimes with the accent and the rapidness of his speech, it's a little difficult to grab a hold of what he's saying, but I was able to hear it through EWTN. And he talked to the young people, I think, at the center of his message. He said, you know, you want to have friends. You want to meet people. He's talking to them. He says, you young people, you like to meet people. You like to have friends. And it may happen in your life, he said, that you will find someone there who you find attractive, someone who you find interesting. And because you find them interesting and you find them attractive, you're drawn to them. And because you're drawn to them, you want them to become your friend. And you want them to notice you. You want this interesting or attractive person, someone whom you regard as interesting, he said to them, and someone you regard as attractive. And that's not only good-looking, but attractive in so many different ways, personality, characteristics, whatever. He said, you want them to be your friends, and so you do everything you can to get their attention and to get into their good graces so that they will notice you and be your friend. And he said to them then very pointedly, God wants to be your friend. God finds you interesting, and God finds you attractive, and God wants you to have friendship with him. And he has done everything he can, God, to get your attention and to gain your approval and to find you willing to be in friendship with him, even to seeking you out through Jesus Christ. I thought that was a powerful presentation to the crowd that was there in Twickenham at the sports arena. And then he went on to say from that, that good students, education is not only intending for you, the young people, to be good students, but also to be good students, citizens, good people, that the effect of education is to produce good people. And he means that in a specifically Christian context. And so he says, when you study, and he's talking in his speech, I believe he's talking to the students and to the teachers and to the administrators, he said, you must not have a too narrow focus in your educational procedures. Science alone is too narrow, he said, but science must be paid attention to as part of the larger scenario. Math alone is too narrow. Anything alone or any subject at all, and he went through a list of subjects, is when alone and separated from itself and not integrated to other subjects and not taken in the context of the big, much bigger Western cultural, Christian, Judaic, Greco-Roman context, that is too narrow and does not produce the whole, and I would suggest that he means also the good person. And then as a final word, he said to them that respect and friendship for the outsider is also part of education, that education doesn't stay within its own little confines, within the walls of the school. I think this was, again, the Pope's oblique and gentle and but courageous and consistent approach to the issue. And let me just say it again. The Pope is there to make a strong case that Christianity and Christian thinking, and also by extension religious thinking and religious philosophy and religious thinking, is not to be excluded from the public square. It's not to be excluded from public education. It's not to be excluded from being allowed to be expressed publicly. And, of course, he's speaking specifically to Catholics, and I think he's also challenging them, as I said yesterday, that, listen, if you have a Catholic school, you need to have Catholic teachers. And if you have a Catholic university, you need to have Catholic teachers. And that many of the other groups, and I happen to be a Protestant, a Lutheran, I would put my input here. I'm saying this through my Lutheran glasses. Many of our Lutheran schools have non-Christian teachers. We've fallen into the trap of the accreditation societies. We've fallen into the trap in the Lutheran Church of the secular world, where the PhD is the evaluator. And so we have people in our schools who do not teach Christianity in their classes, and Christianity has something to do with mathematics. Christianity has something to do with physics. Christianity has something to do with biology and with anthropology and with zoology and with the medical practices and so on and so forth. And we have a whole entire school system in the Lutheran Church that do not emphasize religion and do not emphasize Christianity as the holistic approach to all of life. We have whole entire school administrations that refuse, that do not have the courage to place the chapel and Christ in the chapel and Christ in the classroom at the center of the school curriculum unless they should offend their constituency, as I experienced at Uppsala College, which is now closed because of that reason, I believe, to this very day. So I think Pope Benedict, by his very visit to these schools, is also challenging the Catholic schools to be Catholic. Don't be what you're not. Be what you are. That's your responsibility, and you will be held accountable for that. I think that was quite an experience of excitement when we heard that. Go on to finish up with the children's event. The Pope was serenaded by a children's choir, and wonderful, wonderful enthusiasm, and a little touch there because they sang the song from the end of the program, Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee. The tune comes from the Ninth Symphony of Beethoven, and it's a very, very popular tune. And, of course, the Pope, being of German heritage, it thoroughly found it exciting and wonderful to hear this music. Then he went on to the ecumenical meeting at Twickenham. We'll be dealing with that for the remaining of the show and looking more at Ephesians. I guess we're not going to get to Nicky Gumbel today, but we'll give it a try. I don't want to rush over Nicky Gumbel, but I do want to get to him at some point or other. Let's just go back and have a little break with our song, Hope, Faith, and Courage. Hello, this is Pastor Fred, and we're back on Blog Talk Radio, Perspectives on the Bible. And we're looking at the aspects of Pope Benedict's visit to England. Let's just continue with our song, Hope, Faith, and Courage, for just a moment. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're back. This is Pastor Fred. This is the 17th day of September, and we're dealing with the Pope Benedict's visit to London. And we've just finished talking about his visit to Twickenham College, a teaching college for teachers mainly, founded for that purpose, and his speech to the educators there. Then we have dealt already with his dealing with the young people, his meeting with them in the sports arena, and then the Pope went on to an ecumenical meeting where it was quite exciting to see him addressed by members of the ecumenical community, and not only ecumenical Christian, but ecumenical religion. Ecumenical religion is really the wrong phrasing. It should be interreligious, I think would be probably better. And the person who was outstanding in his speech, in that case, other than the Pope, I think the Pope's speech was magnificent, but was the rabbi. The rabbi, and I forgive me for not having his name in front of me, I just don't have that note I don't have in front of me, but he had a great amount to say about the commonality, and he praised Benedict for his ecumenical leadership in the past. He recognized within the Roman Catholic Church, starting way back at Paul VI, some great ecumenical contributions, and the rabbi was very well informed concerning the Latin titles of the different pieces of paper that the Roman Catholic Church put forward in favor of inter-religious dialogue. And this was very, very important, I think, on the part of the rabbi. He, I think, in his own way, reinforced Benedict XVI's viewpoint that speaking out is very important. I think the rabbi joined cause with the Pope in saying being silent is not an option for the religious communities. And he said that, you know, there is no place for a silence on the religious communities. I think especially of terrorism, which is right now an Islamic problem, and then where are the spokesmen for Islam who are speaking out against terrorism, who are speaking out against human bombers, who are speaking out against the radicalism of the Taliban or of whatever other group, Wahhabism. Where are the Islamic imams who are speaking peace, 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 and really mean it, and the like more? We just don't see that. And I think the Islamic community has to come to grips with that and deal with that issue, because I think the non-Islamic community is asking the question, if you're going to be part of Western culture and Western civilization, then this is our heritage. We speak out against the violence. We speak out against the suicide bombers, et cetera, and we expect you to do the same, and not just to be silent. Silence is assent. And so even the ecumenical speech by the person who is at Prince Charles's art school was really a preaching of Islamic viewpoints, which is fine. But you wondered as you listened to him what his agenda was about. Was it a dialogical agenda or was it a confrontational agenda? That was my take on it. I have to read the transcript again, but I didn't necessarily think that it was very in the spirit of what was going on, although it was very good speech, and I think if I read it, I would come to a better understanding of what he was trying to say. But the rabbi, however, he said, you know, as I have pointed out previously in this program, he had a strong commonality with the Pope, and he said that, you know, in all conversations between human persons, if we have nothing in common, then we cannot communicate, and if we have everything in common, then we have nothing to say. I think that was so well put, very pithy, and he spoke very strongly of the Roman Catholic contribution to interfaith dialogue, interfaith cooperation, and interfaith collaboration. And I think he had a coordinated thinking. Not necessarily that it was planned that way by both parties, but I think, in my opinion, the rabbi coordinated his thinking with the Pope's thinking in a supportive way to to say to him, yes, we're glad you came. We know there are people who didn't want you to come. We know there are people who wanted us to refuse your coming. And we know that there are people even now who want to shut you down and shut you up. But we have to stand together as creative minorities in the world. Now, creative minorities is something that he said that Pope Benedict had spoken of in terms of Christianity, and the rabbi used that phrase, that we, together, Judaism and Christianity, form a creative minority that must put faith out there as a value without price. I think the Pope's, rabbi's statement that we teach values, and those values do not have a price tag. They cannot be purchased. They can only be displayed. They can only be talked about. They can only be taught, but they cannot be bought. A very, very strong statement by the rabbi, again, I believe, against secularism and materialism. And then we had the Pope's answer to the ecumenical speeches, and he talked about ultimate meaning. It was quite an interesting talk. I'm looking forward to seeing the printed copy of it, because Pope Benedict is best understood in his writing. He has many, many books. If you're listening to this through the internet, on the computer screen, you'll notice I've displayed some of his books. One of them is a new one that we have up there. And I want to tell you that if you haven't read anything by Pope Benedict, Jesus of Nazareth is by far a fantastically good book, and it should be owned by every Christian person and read by every Christian person. I think he did a magnificent job. I know the second edition of it, second book of a series of books on this topic, is going to be published sometime this fall, I think, or maybe in the spring. Probably by Ignatius Press, which is dealing with the Pope's books. But there are many, many books, and if you go on the internet and just click on books by Benedict the 16th, you will come up with a whole host of books that he's written. I didn't even know he wrote all of them, and I'm going to get every single copy, one copy of every single one of those books, because I can assure you, you will not regret what happens to you when you read Pope Benedict. You will be enlightened, you will be educated, you will find yourself broadened, and you will find excitement in the reading. So much so that you will want to read it again and again, because you know that you're not getting even half of what he said the first time, and the second time, and the third time, because Pope Benedict, while he makes everything which is complicated, he makes it simple, he does not lose any of the profoundness of the complicated. He's able to keep the profundity, in other words, the width and the depth and the height and the deepness of what is spoken is kept, but he puts it in a format that can be understood by the modern man in our day. Speaking then of ultimate meaning, he talked about St. Augustine of Hippo, and was one of my favorites. I've written some works on him as well. He said, O Lord, you have created us for yourself, one of St. Augustine's most famous sayings from the Confessions of St. Augustine. And if you want a great copy of that, Confessions of St. Augustine, Gary Wills, G-A-R-R-Y, Wills, wonderful, wonderful translation of the Confessions of St. Augustine. I used for my doctoral thesis Pinkington's translation, which was excellent. But Gary Wills brings it up to date and suffuses St. Augustine's writings with a new vitality because of the excellence of Gary's ability with the Latin language and his translation into English of directly from Latin to English. Wonderful book, St. Augustine's Confession by Gary Wills. Okay, St. Augustine says, Lord, you have created us for yourselves, and our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. And Pope Benedict then goes on to say that the quest is not of us for God, it's of God for us, and that we have to find out by investigation what God is doing in our world in order to gain our friendship and our relationship. I think that's a wonderful juxtaposition of modern thinking, where we have to claw our way to knowledge. We have to rip out knowledge from the earth. We have to distill knowledge from the earth and the like more. We have to just, we're at enmity with the world, and we have to gain that knowledge, sort of a Promethean concept that modern education has, that we are the Prometheus and the gods are holding out on us, and we have to rip out the knowledge, and in the process of ripping out the knowledge from the gods, we destroy them who keep this knowledge from us, you know. The whole legend of the fire and all that business from the Greek times is very prominent in American and worldwide education today. Well, the Pope talks about that, and in one little quip there, he mentions, I couldn't catch it on the video, but he says, we ask the question why there is something and not just nothing. I think that's a fundamental philosophical question, which again shows Pope Benedict's deep philosophical roots and the reason he approaches Western civilization that way and Western education. That are we even asking that question, why is there something and not nothing? And as we go that into those areas. And then he talks directly to the issue again of the public square when he talks to the ecumenical leaders. He said that there is a need in the world, in all the different places of the world, for mutual respect. And I think he's specifically talking to government and to peoples that practice state religions and refuse to allow the practice of other religions. Countries where you must not carry a Bible, countries where you cannot build a church or any new churches, countries where if you're a Christian, you are prejudiced against for job hiring and the like more, and places where Christians are being shoved out of society and even forced to leave the country. He said, there is a great need for us all, people of faith, to insist that there be respect for each other, even when it's in the face of the conversion of the person from one religion to another. That was a profound statement. And I know that in the Middle East, it's a direct challenge to those who claim that if you leave your religion, you are no longer valid. And there are societies in the world where there are non-Christian societies, where if you convert from that particular religion to Christianity, the religion you left thinks that you are liable to be killed. And there are places in the world, and we've seen it in the press of late, where people who leave a particular religion and convert to Christianity are killed. They're stoned to death, they're burned to death, they're stabbed by their own parents or shot by their own parents because they no longer have the right to be alive because they have converted from a different religion to Christianity. And the Pope made a statement that we all in the West and around the world, if we're people of faith, must respect each other even when a person has converted from one religion to another. I think he's speaking that to Christians too, but I think that's automatically part of the Christian agenda, that we respect that. And we might want to reconvert you or whatever you want to do, but we do not kill you for converting. At least we don't do it anymore. We might have done that 500 years ago. And speaking in England, that was a very important part of it, wasn't it? That His Holiness heard from one of the cardinals that, yes, indeed, England was a place of great turmoil and fighting between the Catholic Christians and the Protestant Christians, and a lot of blood was shed in that process, and I'm sure that the Pope, knowing his history, would have told him that that was not only true in England, it was true in the Hundred Years' War throughout all of Europe, where a lot of blood was shed between the adherents of Protestant Christianity and the adherents of Roman Catholic Christianity. But that's our past and not our present, and I think the Pope is calling those who accuse us of being crusaders and having the Hundred Years' War and all of that kind of stuff, and accusing us, we need to remind them that that was 500 years ago, and we don't do that anymore, and we haven't done it in 500 years, and we are not going to do it any time in the future, because we've been through that, and we stopped doing it. And now we need to call you, who are accusing us, we need to call you to account for the fact that your religion wherever it is in Asia or in Southwest Asia or in anywhere, where you say religiously and you do not denounce it, you say that, you know, if a person converts from your religion to Christianity, they are liable to be killed, to be burned, or to be executed by their own parents. That kind of thing is our address to you, and he was not afraid to take that address in an ecumenical meeting. I have to say that I found that very courageous of the Pope. The Pope may be soft-spoken. He may speak in a philosophical high tone, and he may not be strident, but he most certainly is not afraid to confront the issues. Thank God for him. And he went on from there, and we're going to talk about that in the next few minutes, to talk about the dialogue and action and the need for integration. He talked about that several times throughout his thing, the integration of religious and culture and education as a whole approach to the formation of a complete person. Let's take a little break here. We're going to have a little song, and then I'm going to come back, and we're going to look up a little bit of Mickey Gumball and have some concluding remarks about the Pope's visit to England, Twickenham, and the like. And tomorrow, we'll try to deal with his address to the people at Westminster. Let's listen up. Stay with us. I'm not going to go into Nikki Gumbel's book. I apologize for that, but I don't want to do Nikki a disservice. She has too much to say and much, much of it to our benefit. But I want to end with some comments from the book of Ephesians and then take the Pope in his presentations. First of all, I want to say that I think it was one of the most exciting and dynamic visits of his 17 apostolic travels around the world. This Pope is a very highly traveled Pope. But he's paid a lot of attention to other parts of the world, and those of us in America may not be paying much attention to it. But the Pope has been to Africa, in many ways. He's been to Cyprus. He's been around the world, and I hope and pray he continues his travels, even in his 80s as he is. He has enough staff to support him. I'm sure there's trial and tribulation. He just moves from one thing to the next, but he's indefatigable in his strength and power in the Lord. And I think that the Pope is, he sees himself as a missionary, he sees himself as an evangelist, and he sees himself as a scholar making a case for Christianity. And that case is a convincing case, and I think he is conquering the world by his writings and by his visitations. And he does not flinch in being a lone voice. He is willing to be a leader. He's willing to take the leadership role. He knows how to do it. He does it well. He's convincing in his intellectual arguments. He's convincing in his moral and ethical arguments. He's convincing in his Christian arguments. And he most certainly has a commitment to being a convincer and a presentation person. I think it was very, very interesting during the presentation of the Islamic Scholar, which was an excellent presentation, although I would have to read it again so I completely understood it. The Pope was rapt attention. He was rapt attention for every one of the speakers who had spoken to him. Now, at times when the camera shows, you know, a person flattering him or going through some of the niceties of protocol and like more, you know, I can imagine that he would just roll his eyes as he's, you know, I've heard that 50,000 times before. But when a person engaged at any point in intellectual dialogue and communication with the Pope, as the Islamic scholar did, and he did, most certainly did do that, and when the rabbi did that, and when the other ecumenical leaders did that, I found the Pope, when I was seeing it on the video, was in rapt attention and paying close attention to what they had to say, because he does listen to people, and he does listen to what they have to say, and he does seek understanding, even as he seeks to be understood. And I think that's a very, very key point to Benedict XVI. He does understand, and he does seek to understand, even as he seeks to be understood. And that is his major thrust in this whole visit to England. He is saying to the people of England, and to the government of England, and through them to the world, especially the European world, because the Pope pays a lot of attention to Europe, you have to better scholarship. He's calling them to better integrity, and he's calling them to better honesty, academic honesty, intellectual honesty, and not to act as though Christianity didn't have anything to do with the formation of Europe, not to act as though Christianity did not have anything to do with the philosophies and the theologies and the like more. And that's why I found it so interesting that every presenter to the Pope and the Pope himself went through the list of missionaries and monks and saints and leaders and developers of different things throughout the entire presentation. And when he goes to John Newman and the beatification of Venerable John Newman, I'm sure he's going to again push at that issue of the importance of intellectual honesty and intellectual academic honesty, and not the kind of revisionist propaganda that we're having presented to our children. You know, I'm a parent, and I send my children to college, and I wonder if we should do that anymore. I begin to believe that maybe homeschooling is better. I know that sounds terrible to say that to many people, but I just want you to know that it bothers me enormously what happens in school. I have grandchildren who come home, and I say to them, do they ever talk about God or Jesus? No, of course not. But and all of a sudden, I'm doing something, I'm picking up something, and they say, oh, that's bad for the ecology, or that's bad for the environment. Or they go on, they give me these philosophies and these dogmatic assertions that I say, where'd you get that from? And that's from my teacher. I have an 8-year-old child come up to me and tell me that he knew what a transsexual was, he knew what a homosexual was, he knew what a lesbian was, he understood all of that, he understood that we have to respect these people and love these people and honor these people, and we have to live with their different lifestyles. He's an 8-year-old, and he's proceeding to give me a sermon on that. And I said to my this happened to be my grandchild, I said, where did you hear that stuff? And my teacher taught us. And even used the word dyke. Even used the word, that's a dyke. I said, what's a dyke? What is that? I didn't even know what a dyke was. And he told me what it was. I was startled. And that's what the teacher was teaching my grandchild in school, and not teaching him Greco-Roman, Judeo-Christian thinkers and even Arabic scholars. No, teaching them that stuff. Absurd. And the Lutheran Church is doing the same thing with its attention to homosexuality and transgenderism and lesbianism as the centerpiece of our social action. Absurd. Absurd. Just absurd. Okay, we only have a few minutes left, but I think that Pope Benedict is to be thanked. I think he's to be supported, and I'm sure that his words, although just being spoken, will have an effect. There's no doubt about that. And he is speaking forthrightly. He's walking calmly and softly, but with a steady gait, into the arena of academic world. He's walking into the public square of politics and government and education, and he's doing it with a serenity and a commitment and a conviction that is astoundingly powerful. And he is not flinching at all, no matter who you are. He's not flinching at all from taking on and confronting the issues of what we're going to be thinking in the future and how we're going to be presenting our thinking educationally in our universities and our colleges, secular and religious. And he's a champion for the truth and the splendor of the truth. I want to thank you very much for being with me. I'm not going to belabor the point anymore. I'm looking forward to dealing with the rest of Pope Benedict's visit to England in a subsequent program, most likely tomorrow. And I want to thank you for listening to this, mostly to iCarving, but I hope you find it helpful. At least it's one man's opinion as we view a champion of the Christian faith who is prevailing against those who would shut him up and shove him out. Thank you very much for listening. This is Perspectives on the Bible. I'm Pastor Fred, and may God bless you.
Thank you.